So now, if you like, I have a little presentation that's I've been making all over the world, and have a theory, like the theory of evolution. They have a theory that life has come from matter, that by the evolution of species, life has come out, life has evolved, human life has come from apes. You know that theory of evolution. So when they study, they have a certain paradigm already in mind, and any evidence that comes, any evidence or data that they get that doesn't agree with that paradigm, there's two things that they do. Who knows what it is? What do they do with data that doesn't agree? Ignore it. One thing is they ignore the data. That's one way of dealing with it. And then another way is what? They twist it. They change it. They cheat. They actually do this. And a third thing he observed is that they sometimes can't see it. They can't see the dead. They literally, physically can't see it because they're so fixed in their idea that they can't see the data. So he developed a book around this, and when I went to Atlanta and I was going to show this video that I didn't bring today, this man wrote this book, and he said that people, they get what he called, they have a knowledge filter, and that filter filters out the knowledge which doesn't agree with their way of thinking, and he called it paradigm paralysis. They get paradigm paralysis. So the point of showing you the video, it's about 40 minutes long, so I guess we just saved a little time. But the whole point is to emphasize that there is a need for us to get out of this vision that, you know, there's only one way to spread Krishna consciousness. We're locked into it, and it's our strategy. It's our most important strategy, but it's not our goal. Our goal is to make devotees. The most important strategy that we have to make devotees is what? Huh? Books. Book distribution. But if we're not making devotees, in other words, how many books have we distributed in Sweden? Come on. You don't know? Okay, 2 million. 2 million books out of 8 million people, that's a lot of books. But how many devotees do we have? Actually, we don't know how many devotees. We only have, you know, a few, maybe 100. You know, shaved head, robed, tilaked, brainwashed monks, right? Only a few. So in that sense, if a marketer, if a businessman were to analyze her success, you know, 0.00001%, hardly. Very less success. Okay, Krishna consciousness is meant for the topmost men, and we're all the topmost, we're all geniuses, we're all superstars. That's fine. That's okay. But the fact is that Upadeshamrita says that anyone who chants Hare Krishna is a devotee. There's different standards of devotee, and the vision is there, who is a devotee. Anyone who chants can be a devotee. And there could be lots of people out there who are devotees who have read our books, but we don't know where they are. 2 million books. maybe 2, maybe 1 million people, or maybe each book has been read, or maybe it hasn't. We don't know. Maybe it's been read by 2 or 3 or 4 people. How many here became devotees by reading Prabhupada's books? How many got the book directly from a devotee, bought it from a devotee? How many got it from a friend or someone who bought it? There's a number of those. So each book could have been read 2 or 3 times by different people. A little bit could have been read. So what it means is we've contacted a lot of people out there by our books, but where are they? We don't know. We have no idea. And if we did know, there's a chance that we could do what? If we knew where they were, what could we do? We could probably sell them another book to start off with. If we knew where they were, if we had their name and address. Sometimes it's hard to even find us these days. People come to the city. I know lots of people who come to the big cities where we have our temples, and they can't find us. Because a lot of devotees don't walk around in their uniforms anymore. They want to go to the store and buy some milk, and they put on their pants and their dress and a hat, and, you know. So how are we going to make it easy? We're in the business of selling Krishna consciousness. We should be making it easy for people to come in touch with us. We're not doing that. But one thing we want to do, and I'm here basically to talk about this today, I want to give you a little bit of a vision how we can develop our congregation practically and how we can solve all of our problems. What are 2 problems? Any of you have been temple presidents, or who's the temple president here? Okay, Brahmahorta. How many have been temple presidents before? How many are the wives of temple presidents? Okay. Anyway. I'm sure you all know this. What are 2 problems that every temple president in ISKCON has? 2 major problems. You know, but I'll ask, see if they know. Yes, what's one? Money and men, yes. Everybody needs M-O-N-E-Y, right? Money? Is this correct? No. Money and men? Not really. You have lots of money and men? Don't need more? Nobody to answer. That's the biggest problem. I'll tell you, it's funny. You probably heard this story before. It's so funny. In America, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, the FBI, and the government, the president's office, and some other bureaucrats, they were having a meeting. A special commission had been formed about dangerous cults. They had a special meeting about dangerous cults. Have you heard this story before? Huh? They had a special meeting about dangerous cults, and they were analyzing the different cults. And when they came to Hare Krishna, the FBI man stood up and said, "Oh, they're not very dangerous. They can't even answer the phone." It's a true story. So, it's true. I agree with you. But actually, basically, the real problems that we have are men and money, because if we had money, we could hire someone to answer the phone. And if he didn't answer the phone, we could fire him. With devotees, it's, "Oh, Prabhu, I'm sorry, I couldn't do it, I wasn't feeling well," or, you know. We've got to be better than that. Anyway, this is a system I'm going to show you. It's my favorite. I've been doing this for the last couple of years now. My best subject in school was mathematics, and so I like to deal with, especially trigonometry, you see, so I draw. I like to draw triangles, you see. This is the angle here, you know, 35 degrees, and, you know, anyway, that's not it actually. No. This is what we call the donor pyramid. It's a marketing principle. I'm teaching you marketing now. I sat there and I taught you a little bit about the Bhagavatam, and now I'm going to teach you business. We're in business school. Teach you all a little marketing. So this is the donor pyramid. And at the bottom of the pyramid is the universe. Okay? It's what they call the universe in fundraising circles. We're dealing with money first, yeah. No, you can take it out of the way because you can't see. Okay. Yeah, okay. I'm sure this is a little dull for you, so I'll try and finish it up quickly. This is the universe here. This universe means that after 2 million books, there are a few people out there who have read them. After how many Rath Yatras, how many Sankirtan festivals, how many Hari Nams? After 25 years, how long have we been in Sweden? 20 years. Ajit, he's been there 20 years. After 20 years in Sweden doing a lot of preaching, some people do know about us, and believe it or not, some people even like us. It's true. So there is a universe out there. When you want to sell something, for example, if you wanted to sell coal, it's not a good idea to go to Newcastle. They already have coal. There's a saying, selling coals in Newcastle. If you wanted to sell the Bhagavad Gita, if you were all enthusiastic, you just got the first edition of Bhagavad Gita, and you went rushing off to Saudi Arabia. We don't want to make too many mistakes, but there's a universe out there of people who do like us. Who are some of the people? Some of the groups, different groups of people in communications, in public relations. Have you heard this word, public relations? I'm sure you all. It's a big thing in industry, communications. So a man once went to a public relations person. He said, I want to get my message out to the American public. Can you help me get my message out to the American public? The guy said to him, you're crazy. There's no such thing as the American public. There's no such thing as the Swedish public. There are small pockets, groups of different people who think totally differently than the other groups. So there are some groups of people who think similar to what we think. What are some of them? Give me some ideas. Punks, okay. There aren't too many of those. What else? Vegetarians, very good. These people can be in our universe. What else? Green people. They're from Mars, right? Okay, greens. Environmentalists. Could be beyond greens. There are environmentalists who are not greens. So, what else? Give me some other ideas. Religious groups, okay. Like Seventh-day Adventists or Jehovah's... No, not Jehovah's Witnesses, anyway. Or Jews. Or Mormons, they're very nice. They listen to our stuff. Religious, okay, what else? Huh? Young people, okay, students, very good. That's very nice. What else? Dropouts. How about people who visit the temple? They might be interested, right? Visitors. What else? Some more. Someone who buys and reads our books. They could be in our universe. They might be interested. Who else? Restaurant, right? Very good. How about Indians? Huh? You said something else? Radio listeners, very good. Okay, we're going to take up the whole board. We have a big universe out there. A lot of people. So what you do is you try to find out something about the people who are potentially in our universe. You identify them, and if you can, you get names, addresses, whatever. There are ways to do that. You can actually go to companies whose business it is to sell lists like magazine subscribers. There's Vegetarian Times. There are, punk zines. The zine. They call it zines here? Zines? You can get lists of people to focus on, student magazines, whatever, of people who possibly could be interested. One thing we could have done, and you did do here in Sweden, I understand, years ago, you sold Krishna's Varld, right, with your books. You had 12,000 names and addresses, which could have been exploited tremendously. I mean, I would pay a lot of money to buy a list like that, but I'll show you why later. Anyway, in our universe, you identify who's in your universe, and then you try to get a first in fundraising. This is in raising funds. First gift. Somehow or other, out of the universe, you try to find people who are actually interested. You prospect. Just like when you go gold, when you go searching for gold, you get to the mountain, you know the gold's in the mountain, and you start to separate the rocks from the little pieces of gold. That's called prospecting, looking for the little gold nuggets. So in our universe, we start prospecting, and there's different ways that you can do that. One way is by what they call direct mail. I don't know how much they have direct mail in Sweden, but have you ever seen in your house letters come in asking for donations for CARE International and Red Cross and, isn't it? Sometimes you get these letters asking for this and that and the other thing. Not so much, but something's there. It's one way. It's one way of contacting people through the mail. You don't just mail to anybody, but you mail to people who are in your universe. And you have a nice letter, and it offers them a nice opportunity to give $5. What is that? 25 sick? 35 sick. Is that what you call it? Kroner, Swedish kroners. Crowns, okay, Swedish crowns. It's hard when you travel every couple of days, you don't know where you are. Anyway, you try to get them to donate $5 for feeding children in India, Food for Life program, something. Somehow you get them to make a little commitment. Then, this first gift, these people here, you can do a lot with them. Now, this is a big universe. There's a lot of people here. 2 million people bought our books. There may be a few million, there may be a few hundred thousand vegetarians, there may be young people, punks, it may be quite a large number in our universe, a few million people or maybe a million people we can count on in our universe. This number here may be only 2 to 3%, maybe a much smaller number. But still, it's a lot. And what happens is these people who have given a first gift, they've shown some interest. Now, what do we usually do with this group? What's been our procedure? Forget about them, right? We usually go looking for new first gift people. We forget about our old customers. We don't get their name, we don't get their address, we don't tell them thank you, we don't send them any gift, we don't keep them in touch, we just forget about them. I call it the, well, in India, anyway, I won't get into that. We have the 3F program. Find them, fleece them, and forget them. Anyway, so there are different ways, by direct mail, by telephone, telemarketing, telemarket. Now you may say, wow, this is all pretty high-tech stuff for ISKCON. We're just, you know, we chant Hare Krishna, we do kirtan and bhajans, and we print a few books, and, you know, this is all material stuff. But it actually, these are techniques which, you know, even Prabhupada used. When Prabhupada was in Vrindavan, he used to write a lot of letters to different public officials, government officials, trying to get them to say something nice or do something nice for Krishna. He wrote a lot of letters. He wrote a letter to Mahatma Gandhi also. So I have direct experience. When I was in India for, you know, many, many years, I was in Bombay for some 17 years, and I was in India for a total of almost 20 years. I developed in Bombay a direct mail program, and everybody told me it wouldn't work. They said, you're crazy. This is an American system. It'll never work in India. It's not done here. They don't do it. Won't work. I don't know why, but I kept doing it. And right from the very first day that I actually did it, there was a huge success. Tremendous success. And the second time I did it, there was an even bigger success. And then everybody started to say, wow, that's pretty good. And everybody started to copy it. Vrindavan copied it. Hyderabad. I mean, there's a temple, one of the, you know, if you think you've got problems in your temple, we call Hyderabad hyper bad. I mean, you know, they have no men, no manpower, no money, anything. They had a lot of problems. And it's a Muslim city, basically. There are Hindus there, but they tried direct mail. And they had a fabulous result. Bangalore, Calcutta, all the temples started to copy it. So then I came to the West. I came to America, where I got the techniques from and everything, and I started to do it there. And devotees began to criticize, oh, this will never work. It's only for the Indians. It'll never work here. And I thought, oh, gosh. And it did work. In the ISKCON Foundation for the Robin George case, we collected something like $175,000 through the mail. And that's only in the last year, with telephone follow-up. One girl, she collects about $15,000 a month over the telephone, collecting donations. So it does work, and you can try it. There are other ways also to get that first contact. It could be selling our books. Priyavrata, he contacted a professional in Stockholm. He invited him over, a non-profit consultant, someone who does this for big companies, a businessman, and he's expert at it. So he came over to our temple. He was talking to Priyavrata, and they were talking about what we do, who we are. And the man said, well, why don't you get the names of the people who buy your books? So Priyavrata said, yeah, it's a good idea. And they kept talking some more about what we do and what are the meaning of our society. They talked for a couple hours. Again, the man came back to the books. He said, the best thing you can do is to get the names and addresses of the people who buy your books. So that's one way we can get a first gift or get some kind of interest from our universe. Then the next thing you do over here is, after you've gotten the first gift, you've, in direct mail, using this system, it can actually cost you a lot of money. Sometimes in the business, in the industry, to earn $1, to get $1 clear, they're prepared to spend, what do you think they're prepared to spend to earn $1? How much money? Anybody can guess? Oh, you 80 cents? Okay. Brahmahorta says they're prepared to spend 80 cents to earn $1. Any other ideas? Any guess? Go ahead. What do you think? 10 cents? 50 cents? Huh? They're actually prepared to spend $1.50 to earn $1. They're prepared to lose money to gain what? To gain a group of first givers, donors. Then what do you do with this group here? What's the chanting, there's 10 offenses. So in fundraising, there's 7 offenses. See? And one of the biggest offenses, the biggest sins in fundraising, is that when you get this group of people here, what do you do? What do you neglect to do? Thank them, yes. Yes? Yes, thank them is very important. I'll get to that. That's one of the 7 sins also. But one important thing is that you neglect to do is ask them again. Renewal. Because you spent so much money to get this group, and they're the most likely to give you again. They're the best prospect for being a customer again, especially if you thank them. So you try to get a renewal, and that's very important. And this time, with this group, it may cost you 40 cents to get a dollar. It may cost you only 40 cents to get a dollar. And if you ask them again after a few months or 6 months or whatever, it may cost you 20 cents. In other words, more people are going to agree. And you get less, you waste less money on your mailing and get more success and you get bigger amounts. So, after you get renewal, one thing that you have to do with these people is take care of them. We all like to be taken care of. But these people especially, you have to communicate with them. Remember, these are potential devotees now. You have to involve them and you have to communicate with them. It's a science. I haven't invented this. I didn't sit down in New York or Bombay and think up a scheme. This is all out of books. In America, there's an industry in fundraising. Every year in the U.S., Americans are generous, but so are Swedish, so are Swiss, so are Germans. People are, you know, people who have money, they do like to give to others who don't have. But in America, every year, people give, let me see here, better make it more obvious, okay? They give a lot of money, 135. I'm going to add zeros here. You tell me when to stop. Okay, it's 135,000. It's 13. What is that? 1,350,000. Should I keep going? Okay. How much is that? 13,500,000. Should I stop there? Keep going, okay. What's that? 135 million. That's a lot of money. Should I stop there? Boy. Okay. What's 1 billion? What's the GNP of Sweden? A few billion? 1,000? Okay. Don't stop. Okay, I'll put one more zero. How much is that? 13 billion. That's okay. Actually, we'll put one more zero. $135 billion every year people give in charity. That's not governments. That's individual donations. 50% of that is given to religious organizations. Where's our share? you know. So it's actually out there. The money is out there. And the fact is that donors like to give. Donors like to give. People like to feel good by giving. They have a motive. There are reasons that people give, psychological reasons. They have their own reasons. They like to do it. We cultivate a lot of people. You know, people come to our temple. In some of our temples, we have big Sunday feasts. In New York, we get 300, 400 people come to the Sunday feast. But you know what people think when they come to the Hare Krishna movement? They don't need money. If you want to be a devotee, or if you want to be part of the Hare Krishna movement, this is what you do. You go to the temple and you attend the aarti. You eat the Sunday feast, you listen to the lecture, and then you go home. That's it. That's part of it. Because we don't ask them to do anything more. We don't ask them to tithe. Nobody knows that you should give 50% of your income or even 10%. We haven't got that message out there. There is money. People do tithe. There are lots of people. Catholics tithe. Actually, it's right there in the Bible, decems in Latin. Tithing means giving one-tenth of your income to the church. You never heard this word, tithing? Catholics must know it. The Catholics are very smart, you know. They know everybody in their congregation. The priest knows everybody. And every month he sends, every week, you get an envelope in the mail. And it's got your name on it and how much you owe. You know, your salary, based on your salary, one-tenth of that. And Catholic mothers, they put the money in, they go to the father, come on, give. And then they put it in the envelope and they give it to the child or whatever on Sunday, and the child puts it in a basket. One-tenth. Tithing. And it's there also for Protestants. And even Muslims know that they're supposed to give a good 1%. Muslims are supposed to give 1% of every business deal is supposed to go to the charity, to the temple. Yep. So, huh? It's probably smarter. Even in India, there's a system. Indians are a little cheaper. It's 0.5%. But there's an old system amongst businessmen that every business deal, 0.5% goes into a fund for charity. But at Hare Krishna's, it's just dancing, chanting, and feasting. You don't have to do anything. There's no message out there. And sometimes they ask you for a little for the Sunday feast, but that's it. We've got to communicate with people. We've got to send them IWR. We've got to send them BTG. We've got to send them Krishna's World. Communicate. And we've got to involve them, make them feel like, not like you're all demons until the day you shave up and take initiation, but they should feel like they're devotees. They should feel like they're part of our family. We should make them feel welcome. As the Moonies say, do you have Moonies here in Sweden? You know what are Moonies? Reverend Sun Myung Moon, you don't have Moonies, huh? There's a cult, only a few. Anyway, they have a cultivation process called love bombing, where you come to their center and everybody runs up to you. How are you? Is everything okay? Do you like it here? You know, they make people feel so good that, you know, they get a lot of converts, but they're one of those dangerous cults. Anyway. So, we've got to communicate. We've got to involve people, our congregation, business people. I had, in Bombay, we have about 18,000 life members. And they're valuable. They can do service. This marathon, in only 2 weeks, because the rest of the time there was curfew in Bombay because of the riots, the Muslim-Hindu riots. The city was under curfew. But still, in 2 weeks, they distributed 65,000 Bhagavad Gitas. That's not bad. That's pretty good in 2 weeks. Last year they did over 100,000. Again, there was some delay in December, so it went into January. But the point is, how did they distribute? Through the congregation. Every congregational member took a box of Bhagavad Gita's and distributed to his friends or put in schools and hospitals like that. So there are ways we can involve people, that we renew their gift, we thank them, as the lady said. It's very, very important thing to do. It's one of the things that each and every one of us would like. If we do a little service, and if Brahma Muhurta comes up to us and says, thank you, Prabhu. Thank you very much. You've done nice service. Don't you feel good? Isn't it? We all need to feel someone cares about, someone's noticing the service we do, right? Even though we're, you know, Krishna's watching, it doesn't matter. The spiritual master knows. But actually, it's nice when someone says thank you. So what to speak of people who give donations if they say thank you by a letter or by a telephone call, we'll be likely to give again. We'll think, oh, last time they asked me for money and they used the money nicely. They gave me a financial report. I saw it was spent properly. They didn't steal it or put it in their pocket. And they thanked me for it, and I felt good. Let me do it again. That was a good feeling. I liked it. And then what happens is these people, after a few years of renewal, after they get faith in you, a little bit of faith in you that you're doing the right thing, they're going to give their money to somebody. They'll give it to CARE or to United Way or to this one or that one. They'll give it to the church. They'll give their money to someone, but if you come to them and deal with them nicely, especially if they're in our universe, they can give to us also. When they get faith, after a few years, they'll give us big gifts every year for Rath Yatra or Janmashtami or Vyas Puja or whatever it is, whatever big occasion you have. And we should have lots of big occasions, lots more room for festivals. And people will give us money. A lot of the times we can't do things because there's no chips. There's no money to do it. If money is the honey, Prabhupada told me, he told me that if you have money in the bank, management is easy. Administration is easy when you have money, because that's what people are after, power and money. The two things that every man is dedicated to in this world is power and influence and money. So if you have money, that's important. So people will give us gifts, and these people, after you've taken care of them, you involve them in an advisory committee. I was just in Helsinki, and there's no temple there. There's a number of Indians, maybe a few thousand families, whatever. There's no temple there. So we had a program at the ambassador's house, the new ambassador to Finland from India. And we had Kirtan. He had a few of his friends over. So I was talking to Sankirtan Nityananda. Big name there. Jayapataka Maharaj always gives these big, long names. Anyway, I was talking to Sankirtan Nityananda, an Indian devotee. He's a PhD. He's a professor. Good man, good preacher. He's very enthusiastic to build a temple. So I said, well, we should have a temple committee. We should have, the temple should reflect the desire of the congregation. We don't need a temple. We can live very simply. We can live in our vans. We can live under a different tree every night, right? Not here, but in Vrindavan you can. Here it gets a little cold, but still, the temple, if the congregation wants it, then it'll support itself. So I said we should go out to the congregation. In this case, the Indians, but it could be the Swedes or the Finns or whatever. Someday we're going to have a congregation. We're going to have a big congregation. And we've got to start building now. That's the point. That's this whole lecture is just to encourage the leaders and all of us to give us a vision. I'm trying to sell you. I'm marketing here today. I'm selling you something, but I'm selling you a vision that where we're going. Where do we go from here? Do we open another monastery and another monastery? Or do we try to have a little bit broader approach? So I said you should have a committee, and we got this idea of having a temple committee, and we needed a chairman. So we asked the ambassador if he would agree to become the chairman of the temple committee. He was very enthusiastic. He was fired up. He agreed. And he's going to help us find other committee members. And the money's there. The money's just out. It's easy. I mean, Indians, in one sense, in America, they're the wealthiest per capita income group. They're ahead of the Jews. In America, the Indians have become so wealthy because they work real hard and they don't spend. And it's a good formula for becoming wealthy. So, you know, they come, they're refugees. I was talking to one lady in Heidelberg. She has, in that area, she has 3,000 families that she's working with. They're all refugees, newly come to Germany. I said, I bet you I know what they're doing. I said, I bet you there's 10 or 15 of them all living in one little room, and they have 3 jobs each, and they don't spend any money. She said, yep, that's right. And, you know, there's a reason why the Nazi movement is on the increase again. It's a fact. The Indians are very frugal and hardworking, and they become successful. They own all the grocery stores and all the gas stations in England. It was only a few years ago that they came from Africa poor with nothing. So anyway, the point is, we can do a lot of things if we look to our congregation. Some of the biggest donors in America are Americans, not Indians. You involve them. That's what I mean. That's what I'm talking about. Some type of advisory board, or you ask their advice, or you provide services for them, marriage ceremony. What did the church mean to your parents? The church means a place where you can have a marriage. The church means a place where you can have a funeral. The church means when your child is born, you can have blessings conferred, baptism. The church means they will help you in making your life sanctified and regulated. So if we're going to have a congregation, we've got to provide services, and that's part of involvement. Then here you get, these people are the ones that after 12 years, these people will give you major gifts, and these people who give you major gifts, if you treat them nicely, take care of them, contact them, they're the ones who will give you legacies. Now, legacy means this is the biggest, I'm sorry, Hare Krishna, the biggest money. I better, I speak too loudly sometimes, right? Okay. Legacy is the biggest chips, the biggest pick, you know, the biggest money in the Catholic Church. They make millions and millions and millions of dollars from people who die and give their house, give their car, give everything to the church. So where do these legacy people come from? They come from right here. 15 years ago, someone asked them to give $5 to the church, and they gave, and the person said thank you, and kept their name and address, and then a little while later asked them again, and gradually they were brought up. Now, notice, this is big, This gets smaller and smaller and smaller as we go up the pyramid. But the quality and the quantity of the participation becomes bigger. So this is money. This is a marketing principle, how to make money. But you could do the same thing practically for... Here I am doing my trigonometry again. I like these pyramids. This could be, okay, a universe of some kind. This could be first service. For example, I've done this before, so I know what I'm talking about. We organize many festivals in India. The devotees have nothing to do. Natasya karyam karanam chavidyate. Krishna also works the same way. He has nothing. He doesn't run around and do everything. He gets you and me to do it. So in the same way, what are we meant for? We're really meant for what? We're meant for teaching, preaching, counseling, guiding. We're supposed to be priests, but we're ending up doing everything instead of delegating, instead of encouraging others, involving others. But this is a way, if you find everybody who comes to the temple, if we ask them, instead of after the Sunday feast, us cleaning the floor, or us putting the garbage away, or us serving the Sunday feast, we should ask our congregation to do it, involve them. There's lots of things we can do, chanting our rounds.